Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like mugs at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
It is episode 68 and it is Friday the 13th. We've got a huge show for you guys coming up. We're going to be talking to one of TV's sharks, Steve Baxter from Channel 10's Shark Tank. We're going to be talking about Australian entrepreneurship, why it's declining. Also going to be talking to him about energy, and I've got a Shark Tank pitch for him at the end.
He was interested, I reckon.
Yeah, so still waiting for the funding to come through, offering, and I've spent a lot of foregone capital, so hopefully it comes through pretty quickly because someone's got to pay for that pool. We're also going to be talking to Bo Sargent, one of our work experience kids here at the IPA this week. Going to be getting an update on what high school kids are thinking about politics and what the sort of identity politics, how it's starting to affect high school classrooms. We've done a lot of work on how it's affecting universities, so let's get an idea of what it looks like in high school.
The people that go to university.
Yes, they are. Cool. As always, joined by Nina, pressing the buttons for us. Nina, how are we going this week?
Good. How are you guys?
Very good. All right, let's get into it. So this week was a big week for ABC and Chris Berg relations. Pete, talk us through it.
Yes, that area of international relations, ABC and Chris Berg relations. Yep. So Media Watch did a story about the ABC, which as we know is a big story at the moment. And it said the IPA's Chris Berg claims X. Claims the ABC does not represent all Australians, which is true. And Chris had this little exchange with them.
Because so Chris Berg, author of Against Public Broadcasting, an art book entirely about why the ABC should be privatised. It rankled a lot of people at the ABC, so Media Watch decided to do a bit of a story about it.
Yep, co-author with Sinclair Davidson of that. So Chris wrote this book in his capacity as someone who works for the RMIT, right? So he had this exchange with Media Watch about saying, actually, this book is from my capacity as working with RMIT. Could you please change the record so it doesn't say that I work at the IPA? I'll read excerpts of this. So this is from Chris to his email. Thank you, Chris Berg. Oh, sorry. Thank you for your kind mention of my argument that the ABC does not represent all Australians. However, you've misstated my affiliation. I would like that record recorded, blah, 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 blah. Corrected, sorry, blah, blah, blah. It goes on. And the ABC employee writes back, we're talking about ease of storytelling. We need to impart who you are to the viewer in a short amount of time. To say you're from the IPA is a correct and familiar reference point. We certainly couldn't have ignored it, as you rightly point out with that complaint. I accept you've written the book on the RMIT payroll, but that's immaterial to viewers. And to say that say so doesn't misrepresent you in any way, we'd argue. Chris Berg goes on, hi, thanks for your prompt response. Very polite, Chris. To be honest, though, I am probably a better authority about what does or does not misrepresent my role, the book, my institutional affiliation and job, rather than you and your colleagues. I'm a full-time RMIT employee in an academic role, despite how hard that makes your storytelling.
That's an all-time burn. That is burns like you read about.
It is amazing. The ABC employee goes on, no doubt you're the best judge, but, James, Nina, that's not how journalism works.
Spot the lie.
So,
spot the lie.
There's a bit to unpack here. What do you mean, ease of storytelling? So I think you'll find, Chris, actually, you don't work at RMIT. You work at IPA. And that's how
what it is like, look, you may think of yourself as this, but I have this one little thing that I've read, which is going to make sure that everyone is against you that's watching Media Watch, and therefore I will use that.
And
like, ease of storytelling is basically it. Yeah. Like, he's not wrong. So ease the storytelling, you're going to say someone's from the IPA, and that's going to encourage an emotional reaction in people that watch Media Watch.
Imagine you're in a court.
Yeah.
And you lie to the judge. Yeah. You say, I wasn't there at that time. I couldn't have robbed the petrol station.
Yep.
And they've got video of you.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate. Ease of storytelling.
Ease of storytelling. It's much more easy to my story to tell than to tell you that I wasn't at the thing. But that's the point. It's like, ease of storytelling's right, but also your Media Watch. Like, you are, like
Paul, yeah, exactly.
Paul Barry, lean into the speakers, all right? Paul, I'm just taking you aside for a second. It's like, you're the show that's there to tell people what the truth is. Yeah. Like, you can't do ease of storytelling if you're Media Watch.
But yeah.
That's my point.
Well, that is a great point, James. And look, if we pulled this shit, we'd be that'd be all over us.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, like, that's not how journalism works, but, like...
Isn't it, though?
Yeah, you're reporting the facts.
Yep.
Which is what I thought. Anyway, really interesting stuff. So if you want to read more about it, there was a long article on Catalaxy Files, a cool blog run by Professor Sinclair Davidson, adjunct fellow here at the IPA. Mm. So check that one out. Cool. We'll move on to Brexit. So this was a huge story. It's still developing. By the time you listen to this, probably something else has happened. It's like, I mean, so Trump's like, Trump was interviewed about it, and it's like being presented as a gaffe. Like, Donald Trump says, no one knows what's happening with Brexit. Like, oh, how does the US president not know? No one knows what's happening with Brexit. That's completely accurate.
Certainly not Theresa May.
Yeah. And yeah, so what we know is the facts, and this is like recording on Friday morning, but what we know so far, so David Davis, he's out as Brexit secretary. Like, they're about to release the checkers, which is like the terms of the agreement of Brexit. David Davis is like, I'm out of here. Brexit's got to mean Brexit. Then Boris Johnson follows as foreign secretary. He's out as well. So not looking too good.
No.
It's not good for the PR. Like, I don't think part of the media campaign the government devised was that two ministers would resign the second we put out this Brexit stuff.
No.
Brexit stuff's out anyway, and there's so many concessions to the EU. Like, they're still going to maintain under EU laws. There's still going to be all these trade agreements under the EU. It's like the classic, like, you know... I can't believe that the Theresa May, who voted Remain, delivered a disappointing Brexit. Like, blow me down with a feather, but it's just like...
And she's been so strong on it in all the months since.
Like, yeah, exactly. So it's just like, they voted for Brexit, and they, like, they've tried to pull a Swifty and just like, oh, you have Brexit, but also you don't have Brexit. But if you, like... So everyone found out, these people resign. There's a whole lot of articles that are really cool about it. So Brendan O'Neill was talking about how it's like pathological compromising to the Brussels oligarchy means the Conservative government is less and less likely to follow through on its commitment to leave the single market and customs union. So all this stuff's happening. This morning was Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Okay.
And he had a few things to say about it. He called the greatest vassalage since King John paid homage to Philip II at Ligouli in 1200 and says that it recreates many of the worst aspects of the EU that the British people voted to leave. Yeah. Now Jacob Rees-Mogg is not Prime Minister at this point. I just don't know.
Well, there's so many strong contenders, James. Like, I mean, you could say it's a strong field.
Yeah, it's a strong field, but I'm sorry. But if you say the greatest vassalage since King John paid homage to Philip II at Ligouli in 1200... You got my vote.
Well,
like, you know, what else have you
you've
got?
You've been a big fan. We've got to get him on.
We've got to get him on the show.
But look, the thing is, the thing you mentioned right at the end, then, which is annoying, is that this is a betrayal of what they voted for.
Exactly. So,
You know, you can talk about the, you know, it's bad that the EU has EU regulations apply to their economy and all that stuff, but it's a subversion of democracy, really.
Yeah, really. So, I mean, it's still moving. Like, who knows? By the time we put this out, Theresa May might have, you know, come to her senses and gone, actually, when they voted for Brexit, they probably should get Brexit, but.
I'm
not too confident.
And they got knocked out of the World Cup. What a
it's been a terrible week for Britain.
Yeah.
So one funny thing I saw was that YouGov, which is like this British polling thing, sort of like Lowy here or whatever. So they put out like, which of the following do you think would make best prime minister? Theresa May, Jeremy Corbyn, or don't know? Jeremy Corbyn, 27. Theresa May, 34. Don't know, 36. Like...
There is a
market to be won there.
I wouldn't know.
Imagine if it was like,
I don't know, Corbyn?
Yeah. Like, imagine if it's like they called an election and they actually can't fill the seats in Parliament House. Like, don't know on so many things that it's like...
I just didn't have any takers.
You can put your feet up. There's a lot of spare seats around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Brexit. It's going to go on and on and on and on.
Yeah, so, and if there's one podcast you can trust to get you through the Brexit mire, it's this one.
We only deal in facts, as Nina likes to tell us.
No ease of storytelling, only facts. cool, so we've got two more stories here. Lawrence Southern and Thai Rescue. Pete, which one would you like to go with?
Well, let's do Lawrence Southern. Cool. So Lawrence Southern is a Canadian activist, talks about free speech, immigration, all this stuff. She's not really my cup of tea, but she has applied to a visa to come to Australia to do a series of events, and she... It looks like she's got it. She says she started applying for this visa months ago and the barriers placed in front of her by the Immigration Department are unprecedented, according to her immigration lawyers. The Immigration Department say, no, she just applied for the wrong visa. So who knows which ones are right? Which of those two people are right? What tickled my fancy, though, was this quote from the Immigration Department. For visitors who may hold controversial views... Any risk they may pose will be balanced against Australia's well-established freedom of speech and freedom of beliefs, among other relevant considerations. Now, who knows whether she applied for the right visa or not? But don't you think that's bad?
Yeah, I was back and forth on this story when it was going out. Like, I'm just like, because if you're Lauren Southern, there is no better thing to promote your tour
than
the country not letting you in. So I was kind of just thinking, like, oh, they were hoping for this.
Yeah.
But then that quote comes out, and you're just like, wait, well,
hang on, what? Is that the rule? On. That can't be the rule.
Whoa. It's like Lauren Southern, like, again, not our cup of tea. Like, I'm not going home watching Lauren Southern videos, but basically the idea of, she's not calling for incitement of violence. She's not a murderer. She's not doing anything like that. But to say, like, oh, those are the views we can't have in this country, is just a bit like, well, I don't know about that.
Hang on, what?
Yeah.
Do we trust the Immigration Department to decide what views
No.
No. That's the uptake of all this, isn't it?
Yes. Cool. So, and then finally, we've got the Thai Rescue. I don't have a whole lot to say about it other than I think the official podcast policy on the Thai Rescue was that it was a good thing.
Yeah, we're pro.
We're pro Thai Rescue. We're pro Nana's getting nodding. The boys out alive. But yeah, obviously, really cool story. A whole world coming together like that. One thing that really tickled my fancy was the role that Elon Musk played in the rescue. So I don't know if you saw it, but Elon Musk decided to appoint himself rescuer in chief.
Saver of the world.
Saver of the world. He developed a tiny, actual quote here, tiny kid-sized submarine that he'd been developed with another quote here, feedback from Thailand. I don't know what that means, but just one bloke in Thailand. It's like, yeah, looks good, mate. But anyway, so he sent these submarines to Thailand to help out the thing, and everyone's going to be like, oh, Elon Musk, oh, he's going to save us this space, oh, he's saving the kids, what a guy. So the rescue chief there, wish me luck here, but Mr.
Oh, yeah.
Osatanakorn. So Osatanakorn has one look at the submarines and decides that it's not going to be too helpful. Says, you know what, leave that there. Elon Musk spits the dummy. He leaves the submarines there for future rescue operations, just so it can be front page when that happens.
We're going to make it a fortnight and some bloke will be living in it.
Yeah, that Elon Musk paid to get lost in there so he can go in and rescue him. And so Elon Musk is now questioning the role of the man who turned down his offer of a mini submarine to help in the rescue of the trapped schoolboys. I think an anti-chief of rescue operations take is a very hot one. Like, I think he's the only guy in the world on the corner of the guy running this did a bad job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The only one who's
the only person in the world is convinced that this guy, not the guy.
The quote was that this Mr. Osatanakorn is not the subject matter expert. Like, what a
I think I'm going to take
I've
got 13 alive kids over here. He's saying I'm pretty good at my job.
Well, I just like to be judged on my results, mate. So anyway, look, it's not about you, Elon Musk. We did sort of have this discussion that this is basically foreign aid in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Here's a high-tech, sophisticated, international solution to this complicated local problem versus local solution to a local problem.
Yeah, it's like, and no one knows how to operate this and no one knows if it works, but here it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And we spent a lot of money on it.
Yeah.
Look after it.
Yep.
I'm going to go fly into space.
Yeah.
Good point, Pete.
Just lost the ability to talk then. No, local people, you don't know what's going on. I do.
Yeah.
Thanks, Elon Musk.
All right, cool. So that's all the stories we're going to cover this week. I'll just run you through what the IPA has been up to this week. So we had a whole bunch of op-eds on the website. So ipa.org.au if you want to read these. So we had John Roscombe this morning, how pessimism helps the bureaucrats in the Australian Financial Review. So just talking about how bureaucracy in Australia is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. Sam Rahim, obviously this story is got a whole lot of play. He's a Sydney barber who didn't want to cut a girl's hair, didn't feel qualified to do so, pointed out a barber that he thought would be qualified and would do a good job. Not enough for the woman who took him to court under the Sex Discrimination Act. That case settled out of court.
Really?
And so, yeah, that was a development this week. So Simon is talking about how anti-discrimination laws actually kind of hurt public cohesion. That's in the Daily Telegraph. It's also on our website. We have Gideon Rosner on Victorian changes to the donation law. And we also have Scott Hargraves on Climate Change Facts 2017. And we also have our submission to the inquiry into impediments to business investment by Daniel Wild. So a lot of economic stuff, a lot of culture stuff. So head on over to ipa.org.au to get caught up on everything. Cool. So yeah, we'll go to our interviews with Steve Baxter and Beau Sargent now. But before we do, this podcast is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, our website, through our Hey What Did I Miss email, and Spotify. So we've just launched that. So make sure you're heading on over there to subscribe through that. Oh, and I should mention as well, the way we got it on Spotify was through a service called Podbean. So if you are subscribing to podcasts through Podbean, you can find us. We have one subscriber, like, because we've never mentioned it. We have one subscriber on Podbean. I don't know how she found the show, but thank you to that subscriber on Podbean. So that's how people can listen to the show. If you are listening on iTunes, make sure you leave us a 5-star review. Helps us out with the rankings. Nina, how can people take even more of an active role with the IPA?
Well, just come and become a member. Join us. Visit our website, ipa.org.au, and click on that join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you can become one of the loudest voices of freedom in Australia.
Sounds good to me. Let's go to Steve Baxter now. Okay, we are now joined by one of Australia's most successful tech entrepreneurs and one of the sharks on Channel 10's Shark Tank, Steve Baxter. Welcome to the show.
G'day, James. Peter, how you doing?
Good. Very well. See you, Steve.
Cool. So let's start with investments. So Shark Tank, it's a show. It's all about investment. You also run a startup hub, River City Labs. So a recent IPA report has found that Australia's entrepreneurship is declining and new business numbers are falling. So this is obviously very close to where you are in business. So why do you think Australia's entrepreneurship is declining?
Yeah, look, it was pretty sad to read that. You know, and I can see elements of that in the community, so I don't necessarily disagree with it. I don't think it's as dire as they say it is from where I stand, and I stand at a certain early stage of the market. So I think, you know, we've got some problems in Australia. We're at the we're a large, pretty affluent country with not very many people, 23 million people in a very large area. So we've got lots of things against us. We've got we're at the end of the world's largest supply lines. Our cost of living is astronomical, and that's linked to how much we're over-regulated in the economy, in society in general. In my space, I think we've got issues there with our new age infrastructure. So our digital infrastructure is pretty subpar compared to the rest of the world. So and our universities actively work against us with respect to commercialization of good ideas.
Steve, if you could go into a few more details about that. When you say universities actively work against you, what do you mean by that? Because that's a really interesting point I haven't heard much before.
Universities are large enterprises, and therefore the people who run them think that they're big enterprises, that they're running them, they must be clever people. And to be honest, they're not. We give an amazing community. Not that universities do a good job in their core discipline, which is generally educating our kids, and you can talk with the edges about the current SJ stuff going on. But in general, there's a pretty good technical product, and you shouldn't talk about people's products, but there's a pretty good technical product that comes out. But outside of that, they're not up to par. So when I say universities, I say universities and the research sector as well. I lump them together, so just to clear that. So and the people who run these think that because they're big enterprises that they're clever people. And, you know, it's an amazing community concession to educate our kids. We back that with debt. They don't exactly fight for revenue. They're the laziest businessmen in the country. And then all of a sudden they think they're geniuses. And if you go and try and change their behaviour by removing their revenue, taking incentives off them, they scream that you're a Luddite. And you really can't fight against that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we talk about education, and you also brought up before that Australia's there's a lot of red tape facing new businesses in Australia. So what advice would you give to young entrepreneurs who are sort of up against this at the moment and they're trying to still break through?
Look, I don't think you see the red tape when you start, to be honest. I think it's really easy to start, right? And that's the nice part. I mean, if government's looking to have an impact anywhere, and I'd like to keep government more out of our lives than in it, to be honest. But if they're looking to have an impact, then encouraging people to start businesses. So when I think about entrepreneurship, I think about high-tech entrepreneurship. So, you know, if you want to encourage high-tech jobs, encourage high-tech businesses, don't encourage research. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. No one starts with invention and goes, wow, what can I use it for? That seems to be the way we go forward there. So we need to reorientate the way that we're trying to pivot our economy to this new digital innovative future. And it actually starts with entrepreneurs, not with researchers. They're very important. I'm not saying we don't do that. We've got to actually change the way we couch this.
Steve, you mentioned that you prefer to see government less in our lives rather than more. You've been described as a libertarian. Do you describe yourself as a libertarian? And if you do, why did you come to that position?
Yeah, look, I do. I'm a bit more centrist, I suppose, than some. You know, when I was 15, I joined the armed service. I love this country. I carried a rifle for it at one point in time for 9 years. So I'm very much a national. I'm very much, I don't know, nationalist is the wrong word, isn't it? But I'm very much a proud Australian.
A patriot.
Patriot, that's not bad. And they've all got evil connotations if you read them the wrong way, so I'm just in trouble anyway. So all those questions out there. Yeah. And so I believe in Australia, to be quite honest. So that's one thing, and I believe in the Constitution, because I'm putting time I swore to defend it. But I was very lucky to work in the US in 08, 09 with Google in California. And I had the most amazing, curious experience over there. We were living there, and I had these moments where I'd say, why are they letting those people do that? You know, these inherently dangerous or potentially dangerous, unsafe-ish things that there's no way knowing you're allowed to do in Australia. And you'd have this reaction in your brain going, well, why? I was only over there for a bit over a year. And when I came back, I'm going like, why? Now, let us do that. I totally turned around from that sort of approach out in the US. When I came back, I couldn't believe that the society and government wouldn't let us do certain things. So when you understand freedom, it's a really quite peculiar thing. But the bigger thing for our family, though, was the fact that we had a lot. We struggled to have a family for 13 years. So we looked at all the alternatives. And many of the alternatives relied on us applying to a government official to have it to receive approval to have a child. And the most disgusting process I've ever come across in my life. To one point, and it's only in the last few years, I've become a lot fitter. I used to carry 50 kilos more. If you've seen me on TV, I'm the smallest bloke around. I'm not the biggest bloke either. But it used to be 50 kilos heavy, as gross as that sounds. And I was told that because of my BMI, we wouldn't qualify for adoption and other programs, which is just staggering. And then when I sort of try to work out why, the people would say, well, it's for the child. You have to make sure the child, it's for the best, better for the child. And I sort of get that. But if that's the case, every prospective parent should be forced to get a license. To me, it's the ultimate in government meddling, the fact that you've got to apply to a public servant to have a family. And I find that, to me, the most disgusting thing ever.
Yeah, it's a bit rich to ask someone who's never met you before whether or not you're qualified to have a child. That sounds absolutely ridiculous. But to bring it back to sort of looking at corporate Australia from a wider perspective, so people, libertarianism might not be the most overrepresented political or economic viewpoint in the upper echelons of corporate Australia. And you see stuff like recently with Coles and Woolworths getting rid of plastic bags because they know the government regulation's coming. Do you think corporate Australia is a bit too close to the government right now? And do you think there needs to be a bit more distance or maybe a bit more spine talking about these economic things?
Look, interesting. Last night I actually went and spoke to some people from AI Group, which was fantastic. It was a local state executive here in Brisbane. It was a really, really pleasant evening, to be honest. And we were talking about energy policy and about why is it that the younger generations just don't really understand the realities around energy generation, cost, base load, and all that sort of thing. And because they just talk about it has to be renewables, without really understanding what it means. It's just what they're taught. So it's where I'm going here, I think, is for me, the corporations, if they make the decision to cater to a certain part of the audience to get rid of plastic bags or straws or whatever the devil it is, I don't mind they do that, providing it's a free choice. It's how much they pander to government, which I think is the point of your question. We're a society that loves to be regulated. Well, we ask for regulations all the time, and then we complain when we get them. It's almost an Australian disease that we wish to be regulated and then cry when we get it. It's almost like a battered spouse syndrome. I don't want to sound crass at all, but you're always going back to the abuser. You cop a flogging and you go back and you get a hug from them. And I don't understand it. So it always perplexes me.
Steve, you often retweet our work on energy policy. Is that an area that you're really passionate about?
Look, when it comes to energy, it's like internet, it's like broadband. I like my broadband fast and cheap, and I don't care how it comes, fibre, copper, or tin can and wood string. I really don't give a toss. When it comes to my energy, I like it cheap and reliable. I don't really give a toss how it gets there. And none of us really should, because that will change over time. I think the current woes are caused because we are... I do believe we will transition away from the current generation mixes. That's a given. The argument really here is over what period of time. I think looking at the current costs, the current capacities to produce renewable alternatives and the cost they're at, that it's 3, 4, maybe 5 decades away before it's really realistic. Whereas others believe it's probably 1 decade away. And that, I think, is what's causing the issues at the moment. And getting those interim solutions to keep the lid on the costs. So... energy is so screwed up because there's no rationality in it. Everyone wants a technical solution and they're willing to bend and only look at their science to prove it.
Absolutely. So, yeah, glad to know that you're okay with tin can and witch string holding up your internet, because that's probably where the industry is going. So we talked about all these things. We talked about energy. We've talked about red tape, entrepreneurship. Are you optimistic for where Australia is going economically, or is it pessimism?
You've got to be optimistic. If you're pessimistic, you should just go and live in a cave, right? So you've got to be. I started River Sea Labs because I was worried about the way that, I suppose, the societal support mechanisms for early stage entrepreneurs in Brisbane, they weren't there. So I did it. It was privately funded. We've had the government come and assist us with programs since. It was too good not to say. probably my later libertarian years, it's sort of starting to rank on me a bit. But, you know, it's there and it's helpful. And I do believe there's some pretty grotesque market failures in these areas. So I'm a huge fan of... I'm a big whinger too. I love a whinge, but I believe I have to buy my... I believe I've got to buy my right to whinge. So things like River City Labs and Startup Catalyst at River Pitch and the other things I do is me sort of saying, well, actually, no, I am in this space. I do know what's going on. I understand it. And I don't just have an opinion, but I have a solution. So I think that's very important. And that's what entrepreneurs do in some respects, but they lead with a solution. I'm trying to actually get us to reorientate towards trusting entrepreneurs again and trusting free enterprise and rule of law, which we seem to have lost, and, you know, Carmichael being one example of that. And it's a chart that way forward.
Steve, I heard a rumour that you're also a Jordan Peterson fan. Is that true? And what kind of... What about Peterson appeals to you?
Look, he makes a lot of sense, to be honest. I have not read his book. I've read excerpts. I've probably read about half or two-thirds of his book from various sort of bits and pieces I read online. I haven't sat down and read the entire thing. I'm not a big book reader. If I read a book, it's going to be a book for enjoyment. I really enjoy zombie apocalypse and sort of, you know, post-apocalyptic sort of hell world.
What's your favorite? What is your favorite zombie movie? Just on that, because I also love zombie movies.
Well, I'm actually a huge fan. People are going to hate this, but I'm a huge fan of World War Z. I think that was fantastic.
Book or movie? Book or movie? Very important.
I haven't read the book. So the movie. So I don't read now. I listen to audiobooks, which probably a lot of us do, and so I probably consume at least one zombie. And I walk the dog around in the morning, basically, and listen to the book then. And I probably consume one book a week, and I just love it. A bit of post-apocalyptic world falling apart, zombies, the whole thing. But sorry, we're talking about Jordan Peterson. What appeals to me about Jordan Peterson? He's a very well thought out, rational man who has probably taught me and maybe a lot of other people to be very careful of the language that we use and when making arguments. And because I believe that a lot of these discussions get out of control when the nuance of language gets in the way. And so, aside from the fact, I think he just talks common sense, you know, regarding gender, regarding political correctness and a whole bunch of other stuff. I think he's actually allowed people to understand that there's a more mature way to have this discussion, and it's not an argument, it's not a cat fight, basically, like we're seeing online all the time. So he's brought some form of control to the debate, which is really nice.
Absolutely. So last question we've got here, and thank you so much for your time. So it wouldn't be an interview with Steve Baxter if it didn't sort of fall into a Shark Tank pitch at the end here. So we've got some
Bob's
sort
got
of,
an idea.
Yeah, so I've got a business awesome. Pitch for you. So one thing...
You know, every time someone walks up to me and says, I've got an idea to pitch you, you know the first thing I say is...
Go ahead.
You should do it.
Oh, okay,
you
cool.
You should do it.
All right,
and well, I say, but I haven't told you what it is. And I said, that's right, because I'm not going to be the customer, so therefore I don't get a say. You should just go and do your business. You're never going to know unless you do this. The person who gets the vote on your business is the person who sticks their hand in their pocket and pulls out their wallet. But I'll listen to your pitch, so it's all good.
Well, thank you, because I could do with the initial funding. So something we have noticed on this podcast is that it's really popular at the moment to just say it's 2018 at the end of any of your arguments. It seems to be the checkmate thing to just say, look, it's 2018, this is now the way that we do things. So I want to start a business where people just pay me to go into arguments with them, and then when they finish speaking, I just say, look, it's 2018, and that just wins the argument.
Yeah, okay, good luck with that. I don't know how to react to these things. I do this a lot on radio shows, and I get these people ring up and pitch me this crazy stuff, and I'm just...
The reaction is to give me money.
I think that's the reaction.
No,
Steve, say no.
It's not the worst ideas I've heard for a while, to be honest. So,
I'll take that.
If that's the feedback you're after, I'm more than willing to give it. And that's the thing, when people see me on a TV show, I've been in a few spats recently. I've been called mansplainers and sexists and all sorts of stuff.
Oh, I didn't know that.
People think I give female entrepreneurs a hard time. You want to see that the dust ups I give to the blokes who come in there and embarrass themselves. I honestly believe that. That the last place there should be a safe space is entrepreneurship. It's, if there's one way you're going to send yourself bankrupt, it's this. It really is. And if you don't get an honest answer, then you're in a lot of trouble. So people giving out dishonest feedback, and it's not purposely dishonest, but it's there to actually leave the person with a good social interaction after the conversation. They don't need that. They actually need honest feedback. It's critical. So, and a lot of times if I come across harsh, it's because entrepreneurs are I love them. They're my people. They really are my people, but they're bloody blinkered. They need a figurative or figurative slap in the face. Well, to sort of wake themselves up. So
yeah. Well, this certainly was a positive social interaction. Steve Baxter, thank you so much for your time.
No worries, bro. Thanks, Shane.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, we are now joined for the first time by Bo Sargent, one of our work experience kids here. Bo, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
How old are you, Bo?
I'm 15.
We are getting in touch with our youth.
Yeah.
The young people of this great nation.
Very good. So, Bo, you've spent the week here learning from esteemed friend of the colleague, a friend of the show, Morgan Begg.
Ooh, now, yes, that's a rough week.
That's a rough week. He's a hard taskmaster. So, how have you found working for Morgan?
Oh, it's been great. Lots to do, lots of work. Kept me going, but yeah, very enjoyable.
Very cool. Now, what have you learned not to do under Morgan? Just like from his example.
Not to do.
Yeah, from his the example
I've got
he puts
one.
Out there.
I've got one. You go first, though.
Oh,
given that it was asked to you.
It's only polite.
I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
what,
you go.
What are you thinking?
Bella, Morgan is a notoriously shabby dresser. And Bo looks very sharp in his blue suit here compared to us slobs.
Yeah, like, it's casual Friday, Pete's in a t-shirt, I'm in chinos.
I didn't get that memo.
Bo sits down, blue suit, letting us know who's the alpha in the room.
Yeah.
But let's get into it. So, Bo, we brought you in here because we want to learn a bit more about what's going on in Australia's high schools. And as a high school student yourself, we can touch into that because we got all these reports coming out and about how left-wing and identity politics is sort of infecting universities, and there's a lot of teachers out there who are becoming teachers out of these courses. So we want to get a sense of where that's sort of getting into in high schools. Now, so what have you sort of found in, especially humanities teachers? Are they big in identity politics? Is that what you're being taught at school?
Yeah, I find that there's a lot of identity politics in schools. Not just my school, a lot of friends outside of my school, in other schools around Melbourne, they all experience the same thing. We all sort of find that it comes from like four main areas. Like the first is the curriculum, particularly in the humanities, like history and English, it's really dominated by left-wing thought. Like the three cross-curriculum priorities of the Australian curriculum are Australia's engagement with Asia, sustainability, and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander histories, which are like ripe for teaching in a left-wing sort of way. That's the curriculum. Also institutions like schools and universities themselves, they're also really left-wing, like the organisation itself, because they sort of have to pander to identity politics, otherwise they're going to like experience it in the hip pocket. There's also the faculty. I can't say like at my school that they're all dominated, like dominantly left-wing, because they're not, but I know a lot of people at other schools where all their teachers are. And then there's also students. So there's a big student population that's pretty left-wing as well.
So you mentioned that teachers just then can be a bit lefty. How do they deal with diversity of opinion? How do they deal with kids who say, actually, I don't follow that?
Yeah, it's either not addressed at all, just like a bit of a nod, bit of a sort of brush it off or ignore it, or it's sort of just laughed off, not really taken seriously.
Okay.
Yeah, so I remember a class where someone brought up the idea that people who are sort of not paid that well in like Indonesia and factories and things, they're probably better off like that than they would be if they didn't have any jobs at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't like just bash the multinationals for not paying them as much as they would pay someone in, say, the US or Australia.
Which is true, which Peter Gregg was written on.
Yep.
Yep.
Check it out.
Yeah. And that was sort of met with a bit of derision by some of the left-wing students and just sort of brushed off by the teacher.
So not engaged with at all in a meaningful way, like a really important issue.
Yep, important. And we spent multiple lessons just like attacking multinationals, attacking Nike.
Gee, that's terrible.
Like, this documentary where some guy went inside a factory and said, oh, it's terrible in here.
Yeah, well, without going back 6 months later, oh, things are actually worse now that the company's left.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that. So we've got the teachers. Yeah. They're a bit left-wing, and, you know, there's no actual problem with teachers being left-wing if all viewpoints are sort of discussed and shared and we can get to the bottom of things. But, like, yeah, as you say, when it starts to get censored, when it starts to get brushed off and not engaged with, that's when the problems start arising.
Yeah.
So that's the teachers. Now, let's talk about the students. Now, you mentioned that the students are left-wing as well. Do you reckon there's also a bit of a conservative thing among students, or are people discussing politics sort of, you know, at recess and lunch?
Definitely. I feel like, I'm not sure about previous generations, but it feels like a lot of students these days are really political and everyone's got a political opinion. There's definitely a group of students, like in my school, in other schools, people I know, who are like into the sort of intellectual dark web type thing. So, you know, Jordan Peterson, Ben Shapiro, that kind of thing. Conservatives, libertarians, people do have opinions that aren't just sort of left-wing dogma. Yeah.
Yeah. So with like the Jordan Peterson stuff like that, how have you found like, you know, I have people in my life who I don't think are inherently political people, but they'll sort of come up to me when we're out drinks and they'll just be like, oh man, I saw the best Jordan Peterson video. Oh man, you've got to see this Ben Shapiro guy. Like, do you find YouTube and these people, they're being able to reach people that aren't political in class, but they can be political when they're just, you know, browsing YouTube at home?
Yeah, definitely. I can think of loads of people at school who don't have like the best understanding of sort of like the policy of the Australian government. They probably wouldn't know many of the major figures in, like, on the front bench or in the opposition, but they have been able to access, like, people like Jordan Peterson online through YouTube. Like, people who are, like, pretty either sports-oriented, not that really into academics. People do come up to me and say, oh, have you heard of this guy? And, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's really excellent to hear. So, but back to the schools, I think you mentioned to me the other day when we were talking about this interview that sometimes you feel like you can't express your opinion in class.
Yeah.
Would that be fair?
Yeah, I know. Not just me, everyone. Everyone of a conservative thought. No one of a sort of liberal progressive thought, strangely. They can all express whatever they think in class at any time. But conservatives in school are either, if they're quiet, well, most of them are sort of pretty quiet about their opinions in the classroom. It's sort of outside that it gets discussed. And if they do mention those kind of things in class, like, as I said, they get brushed off or, sort of ignored.
Absolutely. Cool. So I want to bring something back to something you said earlier in the show. You said friends from other schools. Now, I didn't have friends from other schools growing up. So what makes you so cool?
Oh, just
because that's a cool thing. If you've got friends in other schools, it's a damn cool thing, all right? And I'm jealous.
Oh, you just meet people through extracurricular things.
That's how you do it.
Be open and talk to people. James.
No. I've got a clear and defined comfort zone, and I don't like stepping out of it.
Yeah, don't worry about that one, Bo. so what else have we got, James? So, that's all right. You were telling me. So you reckon a higher proportion of students are conservative and classical liberal than people might actually think on the outside.
Yeah, definitely. So there is sort of a perception that like people under the age of 30 are all these sort of raving social justice warriors, sort of ultra left-wing socialists. That poll that the Center for Independent Studies did sort of added to that impression, where it said that, 60% of millennials support socialism over capitalism. But I just don't find that to be the case. It might be the case at universities and millennials, but I think that my generation is actually pretty different to the millennial generation, the sort of currently over 22, over 24.
Really?
Like, it's people sort of at high school that I find really engaging with new conservative and libertarian thoughts.
How old? When were you born?
I was born in the UK.
Oh, sorry, when?
Oh, 2002.
Oh my god!
Yeah, Pizza's updating his.
That's the year
of interrogation.
That's the year I finished school. That's the year I finished school.
So this is like you're the first person I've met who learns about stuff like September 11 when they weren't alive. Like that's because I remember where I was. Like that's.
I remember going to the 1990 grand final.
That's a 27-year-old.
You're a fetus. Anyway, that's.
I got one more. Okay. So we're coming to the end here of your work experience week. We're recording this on Friday morning. Has your experience at the IPA made you more likely to pursue a career in politics or less likely? Please answer more.
Yeah.
It was. Not since after this interview. No,
yeah, after this interview, he's going to go join a, what is it, drum circle and just protest nuclearization. But anyway, so yeah,
Yeah, sweet. Definitely looking into politics.
All right, brilliant. Bo, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for having me.
All right, thank you to Steve Baxter and to Bo Sargent for those interviews. Really interesting stuff. So we're going to fly through a few stories from around the world that made us laugh this week. Pete, if I may start.
Jump in.
Cool. So one of the main stories that happened this week, we didn't talk about it up top. So Brett Kavanaugh is the new Supreme Court Justice at the United States. So if you want to hear more about what the process is and why Australia should care, we talked to Morgan Begg last week about it. And then the nitty gritty. So Brett Kavanaugh seems to be pretty conservative kind of guy. There's a few op-eds around as to whether or not he's good or not. One op-ed I want to look at, well, it's more of a statement, comes from Women's March. So this was like a Trump protester group. They put out a media release, the first lines in the media release: in response to Donald Trump's nomination of XX to the Supreme Court of the United States, the Women's March released the following statement. Like, we all talk about the tribalism of US politics here, but it's just like they've typed something out of just like, this is going to be our, like, the headline was Women's March Statement to Trump's Extremist SCOTUS Pick, SCOTUS Nominee. The tribalism of just like, don't care who it is, if Trump nominates them, we're going to go attack it. We're not going to wait for facts to emerge. Let's just go straight to the opinion.
Yes, and I'm very surprised that the Women's March would come up with such an extreme statement. They did say Trump's announcement today is a death sentence. A death sentence for thousands of women in the United States.
Oof, that's rough.
Extreme. And also, sorry, I saw another one. Nightline tweeted prior to the... So Nightline tweeted on the day, you know, Trump's controversial pick will be covered on our program tonight before it was announced.
It's going to be controversial. Spot the lie. Yeah. I also saw another one, which was, a guy decided to do some investigative journalism onto Brett Kavanaugh, discovered that he'd charged taxpayers for some sort of food events, but then Brett Kavanaugh paid for it out of his own pocket, like immediately. Yeah. But it was just like, oh, but the first part is bad, so I'll write the article. Ratioed hard.
Check Campus Reform ran a video where they went and interviewed all those college kids, and I don't like picking on college kids, but they interviewed all those college kids about Trump's pick before it was announced, and they all said, yeah, it's terrible. You know, it's my guilty pleasure. The Campus Reform videos are just hilarious but a bit cruel.
Jimmy Kimmel's got like a lie witness news segment which is quite similar, but they'll interview people about things that are happening that night, and it'll just get increasingly like, it's like, what did you think of Barack Obama's State of the Union? And someone say like, oh, I loved it or I hated it. And it's like, did you think it was weird that Jay-Z opened for it? Yeah. And the guy's like, well, you know, I thought it was a bit weird at the time, but I decided as it went on.
Why don't people like, want to say they don't know?
Yeah, because they're on camera and they just want to give their opinion.
They want to take
it. Love it. Yeah. Cool. What else was going to pick? Yeah, I was annoyed. I really wanted it, like, they say XX to the Supreme Court. I really wanted it to just be a single X, and then I could just make jokes about DMX getting onto the Supreme Court, which would be electric viewing.
James explained this to me earlier, but I don't know who that is.
So he's a rapper from the early 90s?
No, I didn't know either.
Rough Rider Crew.
I kind of heard about the name before.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sold out. Fair enough. Let's carry on, shall we?
Well, you're up.
Moving on to the next story, Starbucks, and this is another one for the Straw Files, which I know will interest you, Nina. Starbucks have announced they're not using plastic straws, but the solution they've found is a new lid for their new straws, which actually ends up using
a
more
nitro
plastic.
Lid.
Lid, no less.
If that doesn't sound like cutting edge technology, Elon Musk would be all over the nitro lid.
Absolutely.
Send a submarine, just himself, just going, well done, guys, and then he's out of here, he's got to rescue another
cave.
In
fact, this has got bloody Elon Musk written all over it.
Yeah, absolutely. a non-needed solution to a problem that everyone else was dealing
with. That makes it worse. This is foreign aid as well. Anyway.
Plastic straws are foreign aid.
What do you think?
Discuss.
What do you think about that, Nina? This is obviously, you know, an issue close to your heart.
Oh, this is very close to my heart. This is ridiculous. Like, I don't get it why they have to exchange the straw to the lid. Have you ever ordered a frappe at Starbucks? They have a whipped cream on top. You cannot put that lid on top of a whipping cream.
Yeah, okay.
And how can you drink it without the straw?
So this is another thing.
This is the most millennial this podcast has ever been.
I know.
The ins and outs of ordering a frappe from Starbucks.
Yeah. Bowl.
If you want young people content, you come here.
Oh, my God.
This, to me, is the most ease of storytelling article I've ever heard. Like, we've banned plastic bags. That's our story. That's the ease of storytelling. We've banned plastic straws. Don't look at the fact where we actually use more plastic.
Well, that's not journalism.
That's not journalism. That's bad storytelling.
Yeah.
Got to have a beginning, middle, and end.
Exactly.
Cool. So we'll move on to another one. So over in London, so Trump is either there or just about to be there, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. And the protest movements, they're out and about. I saw a grand total of about 9 people already at the airport. So if that doesn't send Trump back on his merry way to Washington, D.C. with his tail between his legs, I don't know what will. But maybe something that will is a giant Trump baby balloon. So this just got cleared in London. They're going to fly a giant balloon. It's going to make it look like Trump is a baby and he's crying. Mm-hmm. And that is going to send a message.
It's a brave stand.
It's a brave stand.
It's a baby with Trump's head?
Yeah, baby with Trump's head and he's crying. So
in diapers? Funny.
If you were, I think, he's in a diaper or nappy.
Yeah.
Nina. It's usually me that does that, but the Americanisms.
Yeah.
So
go walk on the side. Walk.
And play defense.
defense is good. Anyway, carry on.
So, it was a pronunciation. But anyway, what I like is, you got a whole bunch of people in London who are like, you know what, I don't know how I feel about the guy. It's like, you know, don't like the tweeting, but I do like the job stuff. And, oh, there's a giant baby in the sky. Now I get it. Now I hate him. I think that's the idea. I also like, London Mayor Sadiq Khan is like sort of like the hook of this story. Is like, oh, he's allowed it to go ahead. Doesn't really sound like there was a whole lot of ways he could shut it down, but it's just good PR management for Sadiq Khan to be like, you know, just to get this idea that this whole lot of protesters like, I wonder if he's going to let us do it. I wonder if he's going to let us do it. And he just just triumphant with like the go ahead.
I'm pretty sure Blimshire is
waiting for you to say yes.
Yeah.
But he's just like, look, I've got a story here. I got to get myself into it. I need to show the world that I'm anti-Trump and pro-balloon.
Yeah, so normally it's
good
some
PR management.
Some little guy with a stamp, you know, sitting in a little office. The blimp guy.
The blimp guy.
With Sadiq Khan's come at the top and like, nah.
No, mate, I got it from here, bud. Yeah, but I don't think there is a blimp guy. Like, how do they shut down a Trump baby boy?
Oh, undoubtedly there'd be some ridiculous regulation about blimps.
Yeah, as if there's a head of football policing, as we discovered last week, there's definitely a blimp guy.
It would be hard to get a blimp up in London. You need to jump through hoops.
Yeah, the amount of oxygen you need alone. But anyway, that's all I got for this one.
We did notice the independent newspaper said that this was the ultimate act of free speech.
Oh, of course.
If you remember, brave stand.
How did Camp Dankula feel about that one?
I don't. Couldn't be reached for comment, but give me a spell.
Yeah.
Independent.
If that's the ultimate stand of freedom of speech,
I think I'm pretty sure there's other ways you can stand up for freedom of speech.
Yeah, absolutely.
That endorse a wildly popular view.
Indeed. What have you got next, Pete?
I don't have
more
anything
peaks
next.
Behind the curtain. Cool. So I'll go. So this was a story that came out of Reason.com in the US. So The Bachelorette, kid TV show, we have it in Australia. US version, they're running out of ideas, I guess. The state of Virginia has spent $536,000 of taxpayer money to bring an episode of The Bachelorette to Richmond, which is a city in Virginia. In exchange for some promotion of the state's Virginia is for Lovers tourism motto. Like, if I can, taxpayers are spending $500,000 to get a privately owned show to their thing is funny in itself. I also find qualms with the idea that to promote Virginia is for Lovers, you bring The Bachelorette.
Exactly.
Is there any other show
that, like, commodifies?
Virginia is, you got to change the state logo to Virginia is for fame hunting celebrities.
Yeah.
Who are going to break up in about 3 months' time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to fit on a number plate, but I reckon that's the way you have to go.
Virginia is for commodifying deep human emotion. The thing about this is, though, James, there's much more things... There's worse things for the government to spend money on than the Bachelorette.
Name one.
Oh, heaps of things. Heaps and heaps of things.
I don't know. Maybe we've got Bachelorette fans.
No,
it's just not for me.
But I loved... I'm being facetious. But I loved the Reason response, like Reason in America, the libertarian. They're like, the opening line of their story was, can you imagine a government paying for TV that's crap? It's like, mate, move to Australia.
Yeah.
And
watch the ABC on comedy whatever day it
is. I got news for you?
Yeah.
Anyway, no, so... And I had something else. Oh, yeah. Can you imagine the meeting where, you know, all the bureaucrats were like... How are we going to sell this state?
Get love. Me the Bachelorette.
We understand love. No, but like the, what is it? The
Virginia is for Lovers.
Virginia,
they're like their state logo, which is a pretty good one to have, I got to say.
Oh,
like,
but imagine the meeting. Like,
beats the Garden State, I'll tell you that much.
I like the... Anyway, we're getting off track again.
Okay.
But I just think these, that you know, do bureaucrats understand love?
They love bureaucracy.
Oh, there we go. Yep.
Love between a bureaucrat and a stack of white sheets of paper knows no bounds. So I'll move on to another one here. So Scarlett Johansson has started to ire members of the elite left, I guess. She's taking on a lot of controversial roles, quote-unquote. Yeah. Her latest one, she's going to be playing a transgender man in a forthcoming film. So the film is a true story of this transgender person who was running, I think, a hairdresser's. So she can't do it because she's a cisgender actress. They should have picked a transgender man. That seems to be the takeaway from it. Business Insider published an article by Daniela Greenbaum, which argued that, hang on, shouldn't we just see the movie before it goes out? Like, Scarlett Johansson is just being paid to do her job, which is acting. If she can do a good portrayal, then that should be the end of the matter. Pretty sensible take. That article lasted nearly a day before it was taken down by the Business Insider under pressure, and Business Insider decided to ban people from using the phrase social justice warriors in articles to avoid it ever happening again. That is journalism. To bring it back to the theme of today's episode of what is journalism, what is not,
that's
journalism. That is
storytelling.
Yeah, exactly.
What impressed me, I know business people are risk averse, but the pace of the surrender was impressive.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the speed of the cowardice.
I think it was the same action as publishing the article to unpublish it. Like, I think just in that movement of the mouse, enough tweets were fired off to just go take it down.
Yep. Unbelievable.
Cool. I also like, you can criticize Scarlett Johansson portraying a... you can just say this movie's crap. You can say you're not going to watch it. They've hired the wrong actors. But you can't do it for Ghostbusters.
I don't understand that reference, James. You have to explain
that
to me.
They had to do the feminist reboot of Ghostbusters, but no one was allowed to criticize it, and you couldn't say they've hired the wrong actresses or they should have just left it the male thing.
Yep.
But you can do it for this film.
Oh, no,
I just want to update what you can and can't criticize. So everyone get out your notebook of like what's available to criticize and what's not. Update it.
Keep up, people.
Yeah. All right, cool. That's all I got for that. So, Pete, we have one final story.
Yes, we do. The NHS in England, the health system in England, which the British are extraordinarily proud of for some reason.
Yeah, it's infallible, Pete.
Well, it's a pillar of their society.
Remember, it was part of the London Olympics opening ceremony?
Yeah.
It was like a praise of the NHS. So I can only imagine this is going to blow me away, Pete.
Well, when
it's an amazing organisation.
When the NBN gets finished, that can be, you know, we can in our opening to the footy season or something. So,
like a float of people just pointing their antennas in the right way.
Yeah. Oh, cutting out. Anyway, so women who believe they're men. So this is an issue for dealing with trans people in the NHS. James lost it. That's all right. Women who believe that men are not being offered routine NHS screening for breast and cervical cancer in the United Kingdom. Now, of course, breast and cervical cancer cause a lot of deaths, and screening prevents a lot of these deaths, but they're not being offered for fears it might offend them. So that's an interesting take. Astonishingly, though, according to an official guidebook that has just emerged in the UK this week, it states that men living as women are being invited for cervical smear tests, even though they don't have a cervix. That's it. Well, that's the story.
Go ahead.
So, I mean, obviously, this is why you should privatise the NHS. Then people can pay for whatever they want.
Yeah, yeah. If you're a man and you want a cervix smear test,
fill your boots.
Go ahead. Get that fake cervix or whatever looked at.
Yep.
Get it checked.
Anyway, that's it. That's the story.
Yeah. That's a weird one. It's just like... You don't want to be the doctor that just says, sorry, sir, but you don't actually have a cervix. Like, that's a brave doctor that says that.
Yeah.
Like, I've looked at your body again, and I've got to tell you, you do not have a cervix.
Exactly. And also not offering people who might get breast cancer NHS screening because it might offend them is another thing, which is probably costing people their lives.
Yeah, you know what else makes people upset? Hearing they have breast cancer.
Yeah, exactly. That's offensive.
Yeah. Cool, that's it for the show this week. So thank you to Steve Baxter and to Bo Sargent for those interviews. And thank you guys so much for listening. Once again, we're available on iTunes, SoundCloud, our website, through our Hey What Did I Miss email. And as of last week, we're available on Spotify. So make sure you subscribe on any platforms that you want. And if you do have friends, maybe they wanted to listen to the show, they didn't have an iTunes account. Well, Spotify is a way to listen to it, so make sure they're listening as well. If you like the show and you are listening on iTunes, make sure you leave us a 5-star review. Helps us out with the rankings. And then if you are listening on another platform, send us an email saying how much you like the show, because that helps our ego.
We should stop bagging Spotify now that we're on it.
I will like to continue to bag Spotify and just be the bad boy. Bad boys of Spotify. Take that, Drake. Because Drake beat us in the charts at Spotify this week.
Yep.
But he's not a bad boy.
But we can get him next week. with enough support.
I don't know if I want to hear Drake's policies on things. I think he might have a few things to say about marijuana legalization, but that's beside the point. So where were we?
I don't know. Just signing off.
Signing off. Just this is a frou-frou. Cool. So Nina, if people like this podcast and they like our Drake takes and they want to hear more things that we have to say, how can they financially support the IPA?
Well, just become a member, visit our website at ipa.org.au and click on the join button, and starting as low as $22 per year, you become one of the loudest voice of freedom in Australia.
Cool. So that's it for the show. See you guys next week.
Say up. Your issue.